I'd like to mention that our
goes into taking Mike Levin-Lyman.
And my dear brother, Senator Perkins. And next to seated next to Mr. Perkins is the General Counsel representative from the Cuban Mission. Leonardo Benante. We also have Ms. Cordell Clear. From the NAAC present, Ms. Harris, the Deacon's Council. And of course, representatives from Councilwoman Dickens's office. Ms. Holly from Columbia University. Permit me to digress for just one moment, please. As I look to my left, I see some of Wadley's living history. Ms. Doris Bronson taught in this school more than 40 years ago. So I would be remiss if I didn't make note of the love that Ms. Bronson has for the village of Wadley. Every time I ask her to come and be here, she comes radiant with her love for all of you. Mr. Plummer is seated next to her. He taught with Ms. Bronson many, many years. As you know, there's a second school in this building. And I'd like to take a moment just to mention that Mr. Afrié from FDA 2 is present with us also. As well as the brothers and sisters from FDA 2, which complete the village of Wadley. So as we begin to celebrate the essence of who and what you are, there's a brother by the name of Craig Harris. And I asked that brother to come and share some of his genius with you today. And because he loves you, and because he respects the sanctity of the moment, he has agreed to come and do precisely that. So we're going to begin with Brother Craig Harris. It's no accident that he's here, and it's no accident that Brother West is surrounded by young brothers and sisters, because we want you to know that it's about you. And there's another brother who's from the community, Brother Joseph Fagan. We simply simply want you to know that this is a community that seeks to love and nourish and encourage and embrace you. That is what we seek to do. So thank you, and Brother Fred Harris.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. It's always good to come to Wadley and call this community. Mr. McIntosh has always been a great advocate to get you everything you need to do what you need to do. Wadley, this auditorium is one of the greatest auditoriums in New York City. I want you really to know that. And that's due to Senator Turkey's office, Councilwoman Dickens' office, and our politicians that really have this auditorium. This is one of my favorite places in the world to play, and I've played in probably every place except Antarctica. But I really want you to know this is an incredible space. And so I was honored when Mr. McIntosh said, come to play. I usually don't talk a lot because I like to get to the music, because I don't think we have enough music in our schools or with our children. This is a didgeridoo. Everybody say didgeridoo.
Didgeridoo.
It's a didgeridoo. Say it again.
Didgeridoo.
Okay, it comes from Australia, and it has 40,000 year history. And it's played by the indigenous people of Australia, who we loosely refer to as Aboriginals. And Aboriginals refers to original people. Y'all talk about OGs, like old original gangsters. I'm talking about OPs, original people. Okay? That's the didgeridoo. So I'm going to play that just for a moment, because in our culture, you can't do nothing. Music opens up everything. It opens up the spirit. It opens up the vibration of everything we do. So always in our events, we always have music. I'd like to, I know you have, and if you don't know what this is, you go to Mr. McIntosh in the library, and he'll refer you to it, and you have a good music teacher here. His name is Stephen Aquindo. I don't know if he's here, but he's a good music teacher, and he'll tell you about this instrument. Also, I see a teacher, Patricia Pates, back there, who lives here in Harlem and also spent many years teaching you here, so give her a big hand. So, like, if you want to hear this instrument in a contemporary context, you can go. Everybody know who the Roots are, right? Because that's on television. The Roots. Okay, so we did an album together, and it's called Things Fall Apart. And you'll hear the distribution on the Roots album, Things Fall Apart. Thank you.
I'd also like to mention as we move forward with Mr. Klug's introduction of the two young people who introduced Dr. West, that Ms. Michelle Cox from the Apollo Theater is present also. We have an attorney present also, Mr. Hughes. He is the husband of the counselor at FDA, Ms. Elizabeth Hughes. So he's present also. We take this moment to allow our young people to embrace Dr. West. And we're going to ask Mr. Anthony Klug to come forward and introduce the two young people who will introduce Dr. West. Let me just say that once Dr. West has finished speaking, there will be an opportunity for a Q&A. Mr. Jabardali will be on this side of the auditorium with a microphone, and I will be on the other side. This is an opportunity for you young ladies and young men to ask questions of Dr. West, and I dare say that the priority in terms of questions is with young people. They take precedence. Thereafter, if we have the time, those of us who are older than 25 will have an opportunity to ask some questions. Dr. West has graciously committed to staying here after this part of the program finishes. Consequently, there will be an opportunity upstairs in the library for some of us to continue the conversation with him. Again, my brothers and sisters, thank you, Mr. Klug.
Good afternoon, everybody. Again, my name is Anthony Klug, and I'm very proud to say I'm a teacher here at the Wadley Secondary School of the Performing and Visual Arts. I'd like to welcome again all our guests on behalf of our brilliant, creative, amazing, outstanding, I can't say enough about our young student body at FDA 2 and Wadley. So welcome on behalf of everyone here. I'm also the United Federation of Teachers chapter leader for Wadley. Jaylen Lambert is the United Federation of Teachers chapter leader for FDA 2, so we welcome you as well. Again, in addition to our guests, I'd like to say hello to Mike McCord and Janella Hines, who are in the back from the United Federation of Teachers. I'll be really fast, really quick, because you didn't come up here to listen to me, and I can't follow that great speech given by the didgeridoo. I said speech on purpose. But really quickly, I just wanted to, it would be remiss if I didn't just kind of acknowledge a personal thanks I have to give to Dr. West for, of all things, giving me an insight to the meaning of life. That's right, he gave me a key insight on the meaning of life. I know when I was your age, I was asking myself a lot, what does this place mean? Who am I? What am I gonna do? And after hearing Dr. West, after reading much of his works, I think I figured it out, which is an arrogant statement. And that is that life turns that question on you, young people. By every decision you make, every act of love you commit, you don't commit, every ounce of courage you possess, every ounce of courage you do not possess, therein lies the meaning of life. So every decision you make and that you will make for the rest of your life determines who you are and what this world will be. So by looking at all the young people, we're in good hands. So thank you again. And for the adults in the room who might be a little worried about our future in these times of great change and revolution, I have some great news for you. One would be Geronimo Miranda. Geronimo is a sublimely artistic, creative, intelligent ninth grader at Wadley. He's a likely a future film director and general man of influence. Everything this man does and touches reeks of excellence. Nothing Geronimo does can compromise his sense of integrity, creativity, and greatness. He will be a dynamic force in the world, and you will see. Next, another thing to look forward to is Aminata Tag, who is a 12th grader and a future. She's a future, likely future social worker, therapist, and I can tell you from working diligently with community service in the school and outside the school, from kicking around AP classes, I can tell you I've seen her resume, I've spoken to her guidance counselor. She is on her way to graduate college, and that's a fact. So it gives me no greater pleasure to introduce the people who introduce our guests, Amy and Geronimo.
Best known for his classic Race Matters, Democracy Matters, and his memoir, Living and Loving Out Loud. He appears frequently on The Bill Maher Show, The Colbert Report, CNN and C-SPAN, as well as Tavis Smiley, PBS, and other highly acclaimed weekly radio shows. He made his film debut in The Matrix, and was the commentator, with Ken Wilber, on the official trilogy released in 2004. He also has appeared in over 25 documentaries and films, including Life, Call and Response, Sidewalk, and Stand.
Mr. West has made three spoken word albums, including Never Forgot, Collaborating with Prince, Jill Scott, Andre 3000, Talib Kweli, ARS, One, and the late Gerald Levert. His spoken word was featured on Terrence Blanchard's Choices, which won the Grand Prix in France for the best album of the year, 2009. The Cornell West series, second ranking Le Mans, Love and War, masterpiece album among others. In short, Dr. Cornel West has a passion to communicate to a vast variety of publics in order to keep alive the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a legacy of telling the truth and bearing witness to love and justice.
You can't lead the people if you don't love the people. You can't save the people if you don't serve them.
Yes. Dr. Cornel West is an actor, and he was in the movie The Matrix.
Who knows Dr. Cornel West? Yes? The great scholar. Who knows Dr. Cornel West?
I do.
Yes?
Dr. Cornel West is a spoken word artist.
Who knows Dr. Cornel West?
I know Dr. Cornel West.
Yes?
He's a well-known critic. Did you know that?
Who knows Dr. Cornel West?
I know Dr. Cornel West.
Yes?
Dr. Cornel West is a one speaks against injustice.
Who knows Dr. Cornel West? Yes.
I know Dr. Cornel West.
I know Dr. Cornel West is a man of substance.
Who knows Dr. Cornel West?
I know Dr. Cornel West.
Yes.
Dr. Cornel West is a real soul brother.
What a blessing for me to be here at this village of Wadley, consecrated by each and every one of you. Give yourselves a hand. Give yourselves a hand. I am so blessed to be here. There is a sweet spirit in this place. And that sweet spirit has so much to do with the love that Brother McIntosh talked about with such eloquence. Give him a hand. He's so special. We love you, Brother McIntosh. We love you for your love, brother. I want to salute the captain of the ship, my dear sister Hall, of course, who's the principal, is kind enough to facilitate my coming as well, and so many others here. We've got our state senator, Brother Perkins. We love you. Brother from Cuba as well. Our sister from the theater. And Brother Plummer, historic figure, sitting next to the other historic figure, shoulders upon whom we stand. Brother Kluge doing a wonderful work, and you young folk looking so magnificent. But I want to say this, that the highest honor I have ever received in my life is to be the second son of the late Clifton and Irene B. West. Give mom and dad a hand for me. That's where it starts. That's where it begins. How many of y'all would take a bullet for your mama? Raise your hand. Give your mama a hand. Give your mama applause. We talking about the love. How many take a bullet for your father? Oh, that's good. That's good. Don't forget about dad now. Don't forget about dad. And I'm not even going to start talking about grandmama and granddaddy now. Oh, Lord, have mercy. But we want to start right there. We want to start with that love, because that's how you keep it real. That's how you keep it on the ground. I know this at Grand Institution is an echo of line 38A of Plato's Apology, where Socrates says what? The unexamined life is not worth living. Let's say it together. The unexamined life is not worth living. And Malcolm X would add what? The examined life is painful. Meaning what? It takes courage to examine who you are. And if you want to wrestle with who you are, you've got to start with your mama's womb, because that's where you came from. What does it mean to be featherless, two-legged, linguistically conscious creatures born between urine and feces in your mama's womb? That's who we are. That's who we are. I can put on my three-piece suit if I want to. I know where I came from biologically, and there was love in that womb. We're going to get funky here tonight, this morning. Is that all right? Is that all right? I just wrote two songs with a genius named Bootsy Collins. Somebody know who Bootsy Collins is? The funk master himself. We were just at the Apollo 2 weeks ago with George Clinton. You know who George Clinton is? Yeah. You know who James Brown was? Yeah. All of them say we emerge in the funk. So when they're talking about the funk, they're not talking about a song. They're talking about life. They're talking about love. They're talking about suffering. They're talking about sorrow. And they're talking about a smile on your face and a love supreme in your soul. So we're going to get funky this morning. We're going to have to keep it real, which means, do you have the courage to examine who you are, beginning with your mama's womb? And someday, your body is going to be the culinary delight of terrestrial worm in the coffin. Which means what? You're going to be dead one day, right? Is that right? So the fundamental question of all of education is, what kind of human being will you be in the move from your mama's womb to the tomb? You're not here that long. That's why I got a smile on my face. I just got back from the cemetery this morning. I went up to Woodlawn Cemetery. I had to see the grave of Duke Ellington. Yeah, they got the grave of Duke Ellington, two crosses. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And right across from his grave is Sir Miles Davis. He was knighted by the Queen. You all know Miles Davis, right? The great jazz genius. And then Lionel Hampton's right across the way. And Max Roach is there, the great drummer. Abby Lincoln's voice on his album is Wife. And then Eleanor Dracret is there. They call it the Jazz Corner. And right down the way from the Jazz Corner is Herman Melville, the greatest American novelist who ever lived, who is buried next to his son who committed suicide. Ooh, the cemetery is something else, isn't it? It gives you that sense of seriousness, but it also gives you a sense of joy, because it is a delight to be able to make the move from mama's womb to tomb if you make the right kind of choices and if you choose to be a human being who loves learning. How many of y'all love learning? Love to learn, love to read, love to get to the laboratory. There you go. Look at those lovely hands. Oh, you all doing a wonderful job here. The love of learning has to be connected to a love of wisdom. You don't love to learn just so people can think that you're so smart. No, we don't want arrogance. We want you to love to learn so you can help somebody and you can serve others and find joy in serving others. I was 7 years old when I decided that I was no longer gonna be a gangster. Because when I was 5 and 6 years old, I used to show up in school, and I noticed Starvale had 2 sandwiches and Linda didn't have any at all. So I was hard on Starvale to make sure Linda had her sandwich, which is to say, I used to beat him up every day. Now that was wrong, that was wrong, that was wrong. I don't want you all to imitate that. I'm just telling you the truth. It was like Robin Hood. It had put a smile on Linda's face, though, because she didn't have anything. You see? But what I needed to do, and I needed to find a way in which my concern about Linda would not be gangster-like, but it would still be full of a whole lot of energy and a righteous indignation against any situation where people are not treated fairly or kindly or tenderly. I was 7 years old, and thank God I was in Shiloh Baptist Church. That was the name of my church, Reverend Willie P. Cook, Deacon Hinton, head of the deacon board, and Sarah Ray was my Sunday school teacher. And they say, Brother West, you got all this energy. Looks like you love to read, but you got to deal with this rage inside of you such that it's a form of service to others rather than gangster-like activity. Oh, that's a challenge, isn't it? And I'm still working on that. I still got gangster proclivities today, but I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Nothing but the Holy Ghost holding me together, but we won't get into that right now. But it was a question of the anthem of black people. What's the anthem of black people? Lift every voice. Yes, lift every voice. If you examine yourself, echoes of Socrates, echoes of Malcolm X, you want to lift your voice, but you've got to find your voice before you lift it. And the challenge of young brothers and sisters, no matter what color you are, no matter what gender you are, no matter what religion you are, whether you choose to be religious or not, no matter what spirituality you have, you got to find your voice. And the challenge is to know the difference between your voice and an echo. Part of the challenge for young people these days is that when you look at television, when you look at the videos, you are told to be an echo rather than find your voice to be yourself, to courageously examine who you are. I go into the hip-hop studios all the time. I was just there with Immortal Technique. Just got a new album out, and I was there with Lupe Fiasco, who comes to my class every year, but I still bring KRS-One and Chuck D to my class. I'm a little old school, y'all. And if I could resurrect Curtis Mayfield, I'd give a right arm to. But when I go into the studio, you know what I say to the young brothers and sisters? I say, you all are tremendously talented, but I see too many copies and not enough originals. Too many copies, you see? Echo is a copy, and a voice is original. The greatest essayist in the 20th century grew up in Harlem. His name was James Baldwin. Give Brother James Baldwin a hand. We shall never forget James Baldwin. And what did he do? He found his voice. Now, James Baldwin didn't go to college, but a college went through him. I want each and every one of you to go to college. How many of y'all want to go to college? How many want to go to college? Yes, that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. But when you go to college, just like when you were here at Wadley, you are not just going to get schooled. You're going to get educated. Never confuse schooling with education. You got a whole lot of folk who are highly schooled and smart, but they still suffer from spiritual malnutrition and moral constipation. There's a whole lot of folk who's real smart, but they don't know how to treat people. They don't know how to love people. They don't know how to serve people. They don't have sensitivity to other people's pain. They don't have a concern of other people's harms. To be educated in the deep sense is to take your schooling, but then find your voice and be an original. Oh, that's so beautiful. Part of the challenge these days for so many young brothers and sisters, including I'm sure some of you, is that people are so obsessed with being a star. Oh, I can't wait to be a star. I'm going to be the next Beyonce and Jay-Z. Oh, I just want to be a star. But there was a brother. He's a genius. He grew up in Vallejo, California, and he used to play organ in my church every first Sunday. His name was Sly Stone. And he wrote a song called Everybody is a Star. If you muster the courage to examine yourself and find your voice and be an original. A star is not just somebody on the stage and a celebrity. A star is somebody who digs deep in the depths of their own soul. William Butler Yeats, probably one of the finest, if not the finest poet in the English language of the 20th century, used to say, it takes more courage to examine those dark corners of your own soul than it does for a soldier to fight on the battlefield. Courage. And by courage, I'm not just talking about fitting in and conforming. I'm talking about cutting against the grain. I'm not talking about imitating your friends. I'm talking about taking a stand. It's another Sly Stone song, isn't it? Stand, you've been sitting much too long. There's a permanent crease in your right and wrong. Stand, they try to make you crawl because they know what you're saying makes sense and all. Oh, that's that same Sly Stone. Give Sly a hand. What a poet he was. What a poet. That's 40 years ago. 40 years ago, that Sly Stone telling the truth. And it is going to be your generation that takes us to the next level in terms of unleashing Socratic energy, critically reflecting on who you are, on who your society is, on what kind of world you want to make, and always believe that you make a difference. You make a very important difference. That no one of us will save the world. We're not messiahs. But we can make a positive, strong difference in making the world better than we found it. Now, Brother West, what is it then about this education? What is it then about this voice and this sense of being a creation rather than an imitation? Well, it has something to do with what I tell my students at Princeton. I'm on my way back to Union Theological Seminary in just a few months to teach for the rest of my life. So this is not the last time I'll be at Wadley. I'll just be right down the street from now on. I'll just be right down the street. You all just give me a call. You give me a call. I'll jump in a taxi and be here in a minute. But I tell my students at Princeton, I'm going to tell you the same thing, that anytime you're serious about education, you are learning how to die in order to learn how to live. Learning how to die in order to learn how to live. Brother West, what do you mean? Because anytime you critically examine yourself and you let a certain prejudice go, that's a form of death. Give you an example. Let's say you enter the classroom and you have low confidence in yourself and you have a teacher who loves you and administration that cares about you and you start reading, you discover, my God, I'm so much more intelligent and smarter than I thought I was. That doubt is in the process of dying and you are being reborn into a self-respecting and self-confident person. That's what education's about. That's what education, I know our historic figures know. You saw a decade after decade after decade, you sent students to every corner of the globe
A lot of times they came in weak, questioning themselves, not thinking that they were intelligent as they really are. Some of them might not even believe they're as beautiful as they really are. But lo and behold, you believed in them, you affirmed them, you acknowledged them. Now they're walking around with their backs tall. And anytime folk walk around with their backs straightened out, they're going somewhere, because folk can't ride your back unless it's bent. Straighten it out. Believe in yourself. Have confidence in yourself. Respect yourself. That's how you learn to respect others, when you respect yourself. But that takes courage, because you're bombarded with all these vicious stereotypes, especially these white supremacist stereotypes. I can't stand it when I look on the videos and see these pictures of the young sisters as if they just objects of male conquest to be manipulated rather than human beings with their own intelligence, their own moral sensibility, their own sense of possibility. See, I come from the old school, Motown, Stax, Philly Sound, Luther Vandross, Gladys Knight, Aretha Franklin, James Cleveland. They talked about the soul stirs. Their music gave you self-confidence to stir your soul. Oh, a lot of young folk these days got that bubblegum music, you know. Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Stimulate your body, titillate your body, titillate your body. Uh-huh, pop, 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 pop. Did it stir your soul? No, but it made me feel good. Oh, I see. You're just dealing with the superficial. You on the surface. Education is about the turning of the soul. You shift from the superficial to the substantial. You shift from the frivolous to the serious. You shift from the bling bling to let freedom ring. You know the difference between bling bling and let freedom ring? And you shift between pleasure and joy. You know the difference between pleasure and joy? Mm-hmm. Pleasure is what you get on a Friday night in the club. Turn on Soulja Boy again. Yeah, uh-huh. Here comes Lil Wayne. Ooh, tattoos and all. Yeah. I love that little Negro Lil Wayne. I talk to him all the time, but at the same time I know. I say, brother, I want to hear more joy. And I hear too much pleasure. And what is joy? That's the thing that allows you to sustain your journey between your mama's womb and the tomb. Joy is what you see in your mama's eyes when you graduate. What's going to happen when you graduate and you look in your mama's eye? You're going to see some tears, right? Tears of what? Joy. Tears of joy. How come? Because they love you so. They sacrifice so much. They work, and sometimes they had to correct you, even as they respected you, even as they protected you, right? They all went together. Protect, respect, correct. Oh, that's mama and daddy too. That's joy. That's joy in your friends when they've done the right thing. Not when they reported the wrong thing on Monday morning. Joy. And those of you who are religious, you find it in the synagogue if you're Jewish, brother and sister. You find it in the temple if you're Muslim, brother and sister. You find it in the church if you're Christian, brother and sister. It's not pleasure there. It's joy, because that's what's going to sustain you. That's what's going to allow you to stand at your mama's coffin when she's there and say, I am going to build on who you were, and part of your afterlife will be manifest in my life, the life I choose to live in, moving from womb to tomb. Joy. What I love about Wadley here, when I walked in, I could feel not only love, I could feel some joy, deep joy. That makes a difference. That makes a big, big difference. And when you're dealing at that deep level of love and joy, it becomes a matter of one's humanity. Not just a matter of the color of your skin. Not just a matter of what neighborhood you're from or what hood you inhabit at the moment. It's a matter of who you are as a person. Who you are as an individual in community shaped by tradition that brings together the three dimensions of time. Your past, your present, and your future. And we're here to salute you as you wrestle with your present, like the Sankofa bird, you refuse to move forward until you first look back and see the great figures who came before. And you build on their shoulders. That's why Brother McIntosh began by acknowledging all of these historic figures. You young folk look at the older folk. Yeah, they passing on soon. If that's true, all of us passing on soon. But at the same time, if you build on the best of what we tried to do, you can take it to a higher level, a deeper level. And that is what is so magnificent about you being so blessed to be at this great institution. That may be very difficult at a young age to make the connection between the Socratic with Socrates and the prophetic bearing witness to love and the blues. But I want to end on a blue note. Then we'll open it up for conversation. You're all very patient with me. But it's very important. Because you see, the blues, one of the great gifts of black people to the world. One of the most sophisticated forms of dealing with moving from womb to tomb. Rooted in grand backdrop of African civilizations, even prior to the slave trade. But it underwent transformations during slavery, during Jim Crow and Jane Crow, during the present day, which is Jim Crow Jr. and Jane Crow Jr. Still highly segregated, it's just in fact as opposed to legal. Supremacist bombardment against precious, priceless peoples of color that tried to convince us that we were less beautiful and less intelligent and less moral. Tried to convince us we had the wrong hips and lips and noses and skin texture. And many black, brown, and red folk believed it. And part of learning how to die in order to learn how to live and being reborn is trying to kill white supremacy in the souls of young black people. Kill it. Snuff it out. And James Brown would say, give it up, turn it loose. It's got to go. Same is true with our sisters of all colors, that vicious male supremacy. Because you are female, somehow you are not as intelligent, sophisticated, and refined as a male. Got to die. Male supremacy's got to die in order for human beings to live. And that's true for any bigotry. It could be against hatred against our Jewish brothers and sisters. Anti-Semitism got to die. It could be against our Arab or Muslim brothers and sisters. Anti-Arab, anti-Muslim sensibilities got to die. And it's a protracted process, meaning what? You have to struggle. You got to shudder. You got to suffer. But you keep struggling anyway. Reminds me of Lorraine Hansberry's Raising in the Sun. I was talking with Brother Plummer about when I got here. Dead at 34 years old, but what a genius she was. And you all know. Mama, what is it about Lorraine's representation of black folk, of blues people, always struggling in the face of catastrophe? Lyrically expressed. What does that mean, Brother Will? Begin with catastrophe. It could be slavery. It could be Jim Crow. It could be your best friend, David. It could be your father, distant. Whatever catastrophe in your life, what will be your response? Now, B.B. King wrote
wrote a blues called Everybody Loves Me But My Mama, and She Might Be Driving Too. That's what the blue note is about. Courage, compassion in the face of catastrophe, but having endurance and stamina to be long distance in your love of learning, your love of wisdom, your love of neighbor, your love of justice, and you then become an example of a living hope. When you do die, hope will say, there live a graduate, Wadley, who was willing to examine himself, willing to love others, sacrifice for others, and provide a hope for the next generation who comes after you. Thank you all so very much for being so patient. For being so kind, we're going to take good time for dialogue, call and respond, and tip in a relationship. But thank you so very much. You've all been very kind. I hope it didn't go too long, my brother. Yeah, indeed, indeed.
Ladies.
We move forward. Aww. Ladies, gentlemen, give me your attention, please. As we move forward, we'd like to give our young brothers and sisters an opportunity to ask the question of Dr. West. But before that happens, there are a couple of things that I'd like to mention. This day, Monday, and I don't know if this is divine, Brother West, or not, but Wadley, and I don't want to really focus our attention on the issue that I'm about to raise. It's been about a year in Dr. West's coming. I first
approached him about this particular event more than a year ago. As fate would have it, Wadley and a number of other schools became endangered when they were placed on the short list for possible closure. Mr. Doctor, would you come forward, please? And that's a cause of concern. Both Wadley and FDA2 are in danger. And as you've noted, that would be a tragedy because of the love and beauty in this room. And I have to... You know, it's important to shout out the teachers.
Yeah.
Because there are some teachers in this school that really care and love about you young brothers and sisters. I wish I could shout you out by name, but this isn't the time to do that. I mean, you heard Ms. DeMong step forward and say that she knew Cornel West. And see, I want to tell you something about that sister, Brother Fagan. Brother Fagan, can you come forward with that book, please, for just a minute? And while... You see, there are a couple of people, and bear with me, please. Permit me just to say this, because we want to go back to the brother here, because we are here to hear his prophetic voice. But in light of the fact that there's some energies from the DOE which proclaim that they need to look at Wadley and place it on the endangered list, there's some things that we need to let the DOE know. One of those things happened to be the publication of this book. Brother Fagan, I mean, this brother worked in Wall Street for more than 12 years. This is a brother who has his own prophetic voice. And this brother personifies, and I can't say it any other way, perhaps it's seemingly trite now, but this brother personifies love. And we wanted to let you know that this book that was funded by Ms. Valesco, can you come up please? Ms. Lynette Valesco, along with Sophia, I'm sorry, but Ms. Valesco is chief of staff for Councilwoman Dickens. I didn't forget, sir. I was just trying to keep in mind. And, you know, it's funny because Brother Perkins, there's a long history, and I wish I would have brought the book down. I have it upstairs. Years ago, when I would rub up on the brother and, you know, drop my rap on him, he would respond by embracing this community and this love and the books that we were trying to publish. Mm. We have to thank him for that.
Yeah.
But I call you here in this moment because Ms. Perkins, and in particular Ms. Lester, over the summer, we, along with the publishers of this book, engaged in a dialogue so that we could try and put it together. And it's a stellar piece of work, not because we were connected, but because it is. It has the prose and poetry of the brothers and sisters in this school. And the point that I was about to make is, Ms. DeMong's class, and this is her first year here, we are on the verge of publishing Volume 4 of this book, and the work that comes out of her class, and out of her soul, and out of her voice, is phenomenal.
Black political leadership
closing. But I just have to say to you again, I didn't finish my thought. The teachers in this school who care and work long and hard every day are to be applauded. When you come into this building, you see artwork that's worthy of being in the Metropolitan Museum. When you go upstairs on the third floor this afternoon, you will see the work of Mr. Jabberdali's students, these young brothers and sisters who may one day be the next Romare Bearden, or Matisse, or Picasso, or Henry O. Tanner. And if the plans of the DOE move forward, those kinds of entities will be killed. So I just want to give Mr. Gatta just a minute to update us on the issues concerning Watley and other schools, and then we're going to get to some questions before we go upstairs.
Thanks, I'm not going to take a long time, but I think it's very important with Dr. West here and with the community. And Mr. Matt, one thing that has not been said is that we'll talk about the school being in danger, but this gentleman right here is in danger. A quarter of our high schools do not have librarians. The budget cuts come down, squeezing our schools more and more. Who goes? It's going to be people like Mr. Mack. It's like our school aides. And the DOE is telling us that's not as important as some of these outside contractors or consultants. This gentleman hasn't said it, but we may not see him next year if budgets continue the way they're going. What also might happen, as he alluded to, is we may not see this school, either FDA 2 or Wadley, next year, because the DOE has decided that they're looking to close the school as a failing school. You see a failing community here?
No.
Do you see a failing faculty here?
No.
Do you see failing students here?
No.
FDA 2 and Wadley have some of the highest graduation rates in the city for their peer group. Wadley is above the citywide average. 71% of the kids graduate on a six-year basis from this school. That is above the citywide average. These schools have gotten A's and B's up until the last year. But now the DOE has said these are failing schools and we have to look at them to close them. Why is that? Because they've also decided to put a charter school, a particular charter school, in this building. Success Charter will be coming in here next year. That is the DOE plan. It's already been approved. And they need space. And where are they going to get the space? Here. And so what will happen is the charter school will take this beautiful building. The charter school will take quite a bit of funding, but they won't take all you students. They're going to look for the very top. The rest, they're not going to be educated. And this is what we have to fight. This is what Mr. Mack isn't telling you. Dr. West, what's going on here? As Senator Perkins knows, as Councilwoman Dickens knows, as the community knows, the NACP's been active, is that this school is under fire solely for the purpose of bringing in a charter school. And they're kicking our kids out to the curb, kicking this school with history out to the curb. It's unjust. It shouldn't happen. And we've got to stop it. But again, the folks here have been really kind of backing off and not saying that, but we have to say it, and we got to talk to it, because these kids deserve better. We're going to entertain a couple of questions.
And then we're going to move our
We have a question over here, Mr. McIntosh.
Matt, right here. I have some. All right. All right, this is a question for you, Brother West. All right. As a young man, what gave you courage?
Hold on. Can we quiet down, please? We can't hear the question.
All right. As a young man, what gave you courage to march in civil rights demonstrations and organize black protests?
Love them, embrace them, believe in them, really.
that they can change the way Malcolm Little Gangster becomes Malcolm X Freedom Fighter. Elijah Muhammad loved it. Transformed his life. Love is transformative in that way. So when I looked and saw the courageous ones and I had all the love coming my way, shoot, I could do what I'm doing in 3 lifetimes, brother. I can't get to the crack house if I wanted to. All that love coming at me just fighting me back. See the point I'm making? That I was blessed with my own family in that sense. That everyone can find examples and then decide, I'm going to find my voice and build on their example. Does that make sense, my brother? Does that make sense? Thank you so much. Thank you so very much. Indeed, indeed. See, I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Has anybody ever been to Oklahoma? No, not too many folks. You've been to Oklahoma. I was born in the same hospital as the Gap Band. Anybody know Charlie Wilson? There goes my baby. There goes my baby. Same hospital. You know what Gap stands for? Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. And man, that was the Black Wall Street. The Black Wall Street was the place that had more money in black America than any other place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Greenwood G, Archer A, P, Pine, so they call it the Gap Band, the Greenwood Archer Pine Band. Part of the history, rich history of Oklahoma, you see. But then I moved to California. I know y'all have to go. So good to see you. So good to see you. Yes, Lee, you're so nice. That red one. But then I moved to California. Sunshine Land. Sacramento, California, capital. Not San Francisco, not Los Angeles, not San Diego, Sacramento. But we were not that well known. You know what I mean? And it was there where I was able to see these courageous people in my neighborhood, in my community, in my church, and so forth. Oh, thank you so very much. In my church. And we didn't have politicians like Brother Burke. It was Lily White, looking more like the National Hockey League than the National Basketball Association. But we saw other courageous freedom fighters who were not at that time able to run for office and win and still hold on to integrity. But I was just impressed to be able to have access to that deep sacrament. It was exciting. And in many ways, just like what's coming back now, the awakening I was talking about, exciting for you to live in this. Feel my brother like a big dove. Brother Mark. Beautiful, beautiful.
There's a question over here. Over here. There you go. Right here.
Shut up.
Over here.
Dr. Making me nervous. Oh, he has a question.
Black skin, white man. He states the fact that unless they'll always be slaves as long as they're masters. In society, you know that there are higher beings that that mentally depressed, that actually mentally enslave, especially the blacks. In this kind of society, that this will ever change. But daily, as you see that, as you talk about that male supremacy or white supremacy, that you know that in society that young women have to show their sexuality or even to expose themselves just to be accepted. Do you think that even for blacks to even be accepted, they have to even try to imitate exactly what they see on TV or exactly what they exactly what they hear? Do you think that this will ever change in this kind of society?
Well, I appreciate that question, my brother, but absolutely, that was an eloquent. That was an eloquent question. But it will definitely change. The very fact that you all are sitting here on this stage with the kind of style
already a sign that it can change. Already a sign. Now, of course, it doesn't change as much as we would like it, because we want the change to be massive. We want a fundamental transformation, and that's what we're fighting for. But as long as we have a cloud of witnesses, as long as we have enough people who are willing to break that cycle, when I think of, okay, trying to reduce women, especially black women, down to objects, here come Erykah Badu. She won't accept it. I said, go on, Erykah. Do your thing. Tell the truth. Will Jill Scott accept it? No. Will Indy Irie accept it? No. We got a whole battalion, a whole cloud of sisters who will not accept. You got teachers, magnificent teachers who will not accept it. Affirming their humanity. And the sisters who do accept it, you just embrace them and love them and say, we are going to keep track of you even as you sleepwalk, because we know one day you're going to wake up. You know what I mean? See the point? Wonderful question.
Stop.
Get the back of the corner.
According to your statement that... Huh? Oh my God, I'm sitting down. I don't
want
to... Teach, I don't want to speak. I'm nervous. Okay. According to your biography, it stated that the U.S. is a nation where white supremacy continues every day. Do you still believe this, even though that there's a black president?
A dream for
brothers to achieve. His dream was, I want every human being to be able to live a life of dignity and decency. And that goes far beyond just one or two or three or ten individuals. So I would say this, our dear brother Barack Obama, he is a fulfillment of Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream. He's not the fulfillment. Martin Luther King's dream will not be fulfilled with each and every one of you, all of the folks, not just black, but brown and yellow, and those living on the reservations, and those friends for known called the wretched of the earth around the world. That's the kind of brother we talk about here. Look at his eyes. He's serious. He's not just talking about one or two isolated folk doing well. He's talking about Jamal on the corner, Leticia around the block. He's talking about the brown brothers and sisters. He's talking about Asian brothers and sisters. And yes, he's talking about poor white brothers and sisters. He's talking about human beings across the board. That precious little baby living a life of dignity and decency. Look at it moving already. Just moving, ready to get on the move. That's what Martin's talking about. So I appreciate your question about the president. And very much like what I said about love, we got to protect Brother Barack Obama. We got people coming at him unfairly, arbitrarily. We got to respect Brother Barack Obama because he's a human being and because he's in a very difficult position. And third, you remember what my third point was in love? Correct. You got to correct Barack Obama if he starts leaning too much toward the strong and the powerful and not enough toward the weak and the vulnerable. Appreciate that question.
We have time for just one more question. And then I'm going to ask if all of you proceed to your sixth period class. Brother West is going to be here. So that will give us an opportunity to entertain some questions in the library. But just one more question.
The stronger argument if people don't have as much money and much power, but we do have power. And I think they're going to find out we got more power than they think. But the important thing is you just keep your spirit up and head high to the sky and know there's a whole lot of folk, not just in New York City, but in New Jersey and around this area who are willing to come to your support. Very important. That's all I can say, my dear sister. Stay strong. Stay strong in what you're doing. Very much so.
Before we leave,
question was from PS 123. So you can see that we're under assault all across this city. But as we escort Dr. West upstairs to the library, I'd like to mention that Ms. Harriet Fortson from the NAACP is present also. And it's really important that we thank these young brothers and sisters on this stage.
Yeah.
It isn't easy. It isn't easy to stand up before an audience, especially under such short notice. It was only yesterday that I decided, when I was talking to Liz DeMong, that we should try and improvise a little bit with this introduction. And all of these young ladies and young men step forward. And it's important to let you know that we are capable of doing monumental things. So we thank you. Stand up and take a bow, my sisters and brothers. Dr. West, I'm really at a loss for words for what I can say to you, sir, my brother. I really am. Just to let you know what's going to happen, Dr. West is going to have a tete-a-tete interview subsequent to this, this gathering, and then he's going to come upstairs to the library. But I have to say to you, sir, this moment has been a year in the making. And I have to thank you and let you know that on behalf of the village of Wadley, we love you, we follow your example, and we sincerely thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Please proceed to your sixth period classes. Proceed to your